Good morning.
Would you like to reserve some time?
Yes, 3 minutes, please. Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Kathleen Shea on behalf of the appellant, Robert Jackson, who is also present in court today. Mr. Jackson was denied his right to a unanimous jury. He was charged with attempted commercial sexual abuse of a minor, which is an alternative means crime. And when charged with an alternative means crime, he had the right to a unanimous jury verdict as to the means charged. Now, the state in this case has not contested that commercial sexual abuse of a minor is an alternative means crime. And here, the state charged Mr. Jackson under two subsections of that statute. It alleged that he attempted to agree to pay a minor, to pay a fee to a minor in exchange for sexual conduct, and that he attempted to offer to pay a minor to pay a fee to a minor to engage in sexual conduct. This was a crime of attempt because there was no actual minor, obviously, involved in this incident. This was a sting operation with police detectives, where a police detective was posting an ad representing to be a woman who, as the posting initially indicated, 20 years old. The state proceeded under these two separate means, but conflated the means for the jury and never elected one. Despite acknowledging that they were separate, the state went on to then present to the jury that there was this this idea that the individual had, Mr. Jackson, had paid or agreed to pay, solicited, offered, or requested to engage, and said at the moment when he has that back and forth, he has committed a crime. Excuse me, I'm a little under the weather this morning. But they made this representation to the jury and never elected one or the other, and there simply wasn't sufficient evidence here for one of the means that the state charged. There was not sufficient evidence, beyond a reasonable doubt, that Mr. Jackson had actually solicited a minor. All of the communication in this case was captured over an email, which is in Exhibit 8, and there is nothing there that can be construed to suggest that Mr. Jackson was soliciting a minor. The only thing he ever said that could be described as solicitation was his initial response to the ad, in which he said, "Do you still need that lovin'?"
But he didn't break off after he found out she was under 16.
He did not break off. But I don't think that changes the analysis as to whether or not we're talking about a solicitation here or an agreement. Those are two very distinct things, as the state has acknowledged. They mean two very different things under our common understanding of those words. And at that point, when he made that statement, he was responding to a posting from a detective who had indicated that this was a 20-year-old woman and said nothing about payment. It was only after that
Your point is it's a solicitation, but a solicitation at that point, he thinks, of an adult, not a minor?
Yes, and certainly...
So it's what he thought.
Right, and there was certainly no mention at that point in the exchange of payment. So there was no discussion of that. The posting did not describe payment.
But it was a solicitation, you agree?
At that time, mm-hmm. Do you need that loving? I think that that could be reasonably construed as a solicitation of a 20-year-old woman.
And the chain of the transaction was never broken?
The chain was never broken. In terms of, you mean they had this one continuous email conversation?
It's a solicitation. It's a transaction that has started. And in the course of that transaction, the solicitation's made, and then he learns that she is underage. The
right.
Transaction does not stop.
But
the solicitation
under
that you would claim was of an adult doesn't stop when she describes that she's under 16.
Well, I think the solicitation does end with that statement. The solicitation does end there, and the rest of it indicates agreement. At that point, the conversation changes. The detective represents that he's underage, brings in the information about payment, and at that point, Mr. Jackson indicates agreement. But he never at that point solicits a minor for a fee, which is what's required under the statute.
But doesn't he say, where are you and do you have a place?
Yes. So he does make those statements to work out details, but if you look at those statements where they are, and as I discussed in my reply brief, when the state talks about those statements, it specifically leaves out the first thing that's said, which is okay. So before those statements, Mr. Jackson is saying, okay, where do you want to meet, or okay, and asking a follow-up question. That's not the same as solicitation. Okay, I would submit to the court, very strongly indicates agreement, not solicitation.
So if he had said, now that I know that you're a minor and I know you want $100, are you still interested? Is that then a solicitation? And if that is, then why isn't that implicit in what he's saying?
I don't think that that is implicit, because I don't think that these are interchangeable. I think that's sort of what we get into when you're talking about this, the idea that agreement and solicitation are interchangeable. And I think that's exactly what the state did during its closing argument and what it's tried to present, that there's this back and forth, and so you can say it's agrees or offers, but that's not the same as him, once again, Your Honor's example of him specifically soliciting a minor. Any indication of solicitation came before he understood that. Anything after that was agreement. He did not make a statement, as Your Honor has suggested. And then if very briefly, I could also touch on the second issue we raised, which has to do with the discovery rules. I think that just like to submit to the court very briefly that was very clear error on the part of the trial court, I think.
But, I mean, do you agree Garsky gave opinion testimony based on his experience?
Yes.
And there was no objection to that testimony, was there?
There was not an objection to that testimony, but it should. But that is a different. That's different than an instruction being given to the jury about an expert. The issue here is the fact that the jury never should have been instructed that was expert testimony, regardless of whether or not there was an objection.
But why isn't it harmless?
I don't think it's harmless, and if I could eat into my time really briefly, because in this case, Detective Garsky said a number of things that were very prejudicial, talking about the type of responses they get in sting operations, the fact that a lot of people stop responding when they hear the poster's underage, the fact that they're only interested in targeting people who are interested in patronizing juveniles, not adults. All of those things, that was very damaging testimony. And at the end, by backdooring this and having the state come around and say, now we're going to get an expert instruction and never notifying the defense, that was extremely prejudicial, because when viewed from that lens, that is different than if this was simply a lay witness, which is how the defense was operating at trial.
But the testimony was already in. The jury had heard all the testimony.
Had heard it, but did not have an instruction that said this is an expert.
Did the state argue that in their closing that he was an expert?
They did not say that explicitly, no.
Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. Kristen Rellier, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney for King County, representing the state of Washington. This court should affirm Mr. Jackson's conviction for attempted commercial sexual abuse of a minor because sufficient evidence supports his conviction. And with regards to, if I could just briefly turn to the expert witness instruction since we just ended on that, I would just note that there was no discovery violation here. The criminal rules 4.7 requires the state to disclose the expert's name, address, and reports. Here the state complied with those requirements. The idea that Detective Garsky's testimony was a surprise as an expert, I think, is meritless and honestly kind of perplexing given this record. Detective Garsky testified on direct for 30 pages about his experience, and then defense counsel successfully used his expertise on cross to draw out certain facts.
But if it didn't matter, what's the point of then asking for the expert instruction at the end?
Well, he
prosecutor thought there was some value, or he wouldn't have done it.
Yes, and I didn't mean to imply that. The expert witness instruction was appropriate because, and I have not heard defense challenge, Detective Garsky was qualified as an expert witness, and he did provide testimony that was helpful to the trier of fact. So the trial court properly provided the instruction. And it's true, the state did not rely in closing, did not refer to Detective Garsky as an expert, but certainly both counsel, the state and defense counsel in closing, talked about things like the going rate of prostitution, which the only source of
But isn't the point of saying he's going to be offered as an expert is to provide an opportunity for objections before the testimony is given?
Yes.
And to have a counter expert if you're going to treat that as tell the jury that it's expert opinion? So isn't there harm here to the defense?
No, I don't think there is harm. I think this is very similar to a treating physician who would come in as a fact witness and also give some expert testimony. And I think when you look at this record, it's hard to believe that defense counsel below at trial was surprised that Detective Garski had testified as an expert, because he clearly had specialized training and experience.
How was it disclosed? I missed that part.
Yes, what Criminal Rule 4.7 requires is the expert's name, the expert's address, and the expert's report. And that was disclosed here. Certainly in the probable cause certification, it referenced Detective Garski's role in setting up this undercover operation to target juvenile prostitution. Detective Garski's report was provided in discovery. It contained a whole page. That's in the record at 4 RP 416, a whole page of Detective Garski's operation experience. The trial brief from the state listed.
You're saying the same information was provided but not labeled as it for expert witness purposes?
Yes. There was no special star that said Detective Garski is going to be a fact witness and an expert witness. And our position is that's not required. If I could turn to the first issue regarding sufficiency of the evidence.
Before you start there, do you agree that this is not an alternative means? I mean, that we're not arguing over whether this is an alternative means statute?
Well, that's certainly what I said in my brief, that there's no published case law on point. And when I looked at the statute and when I thought about alternative means analysis when I started as a prosecutor 10 years ago, frankly, we tended to think that if you looked at a statute and if there were different subsections and different definitions, and those were probably alternative means. We certainly thought that when I go all the way back to district court and practicing with DUIs. But since Sandholm and Owens and recently from this court and Tyler and Butler from Division II, looking back at that, I think it's arguable that commercial sex abuse of a minor is not an alternative means crime. But in my brief, I said there's no case law in point, and I had reasoned that because agreeing and soliciting sound like distinct acts, you know, it probably is. But I could understand if you went a different way. In the end, either way, Mr. Jackson's conviction should be affirmed, whether it's an alternative means crime or if it's not. Because if it's not an alternative means crime, then obviously unanimity isn't an issue, because Mr. Jackson hasn't challenged the sufficiency of the evidence under the pay or agree to pay prong of the statute. If it is an alternative means crime, if that's what you conclude, then you should still affirm because there's sufficient evidence of solicitation. And if I can just talk briefly about that evidence. Here there was ample evidence that the defendant, Mr. Jackson, intended to commit commercial sex abuse of a minor and that he took a substantial step. And I just want to pause for a moment and just focus on the fact that this is attempted commercial sex abuse of a minor, so that when we talk about solicitation, we should have that in mind. Here, Mr. Jackson admitted that he went to the casual encounters tab of Craigslist and that he went there looking for sex and knowing that prostitution was prevalent on that page. He admitted to exchanging emails with a prostitute and he admitted to going to a hotel to patronize a prostitute. The only disputed issue was whether or not he knew this was a minor, and there's strong evidence that he did. He twice received an email, the second time by mistake. The detective testified that he was corresponding with numbers of folks at the same time, but twice received an email saying that the prostitute was 15. And after that second time, he asked, quote, "Why did you tell me your age? Is this a sting?" Question mark. Which suggests that he did, in fact, see that she was almost 16, meaning that she was 15. And he didn't stop there. He continued forward. He continued to solicit by asking, "Where do you want to meet?" And then he showed up. I agree with Judge Applewick that the solicitation doesn't stop. He started out going to casual encounters looking for sex, and then as it continues on, as the exchange goes forward, he keeps going even after he's learned twice in two emails that she's 15.
So maybe he attempted to agree to sex with a 15-year-old, but did he really attempt to solicit from a 15-year-old? Is it an objective determination or a subjective determination?
I believe objectively from the evidence here that, yes, he did intend to have sex with a minor. Because after receiving an email twice saying that she was 15, he continued forward. You arrange the detail.
Counsel's point is if the solicitation prong is that, is he's initiating. But he didn't intend to initiate with a minor, and it ought to stop there. He could only have accepted or agreed to sex with a minor because that's what she offered in return.
Right, and I agree that the evidence does not seem to suggest that when he first went to Casual Encounters that he went looking for a minor. My point is, once he found out she was a minor, he didn't stop. He kept going, and he arranged the details, and he showed up with the negotiated price, $100 in hand, and the lubricant and everything else ready to commit that crime. He took a substantial step with the intent to commit commercial sex abuse of a minor, and that's why this court should affirm his conviction. With regards to the other issues, I'll rest on my briefing unless the court has any questions. No. Okay. Thank you.
Got a little over two. I'll start it late.
Thanks. If I could just briefly reference the court rule, which explicitly says, quote, any expert witnesses whom the prosecuting attorney will call at the hearing of or trial.
But you're not claiming that you were deprived the opportunity to obtain your own expert witness.
The record, right.
The other information was all provided cross-examination.
What is indicated from the record is that the defense operated differently because they were not aware of this. And I just want to be clear that I think the state is absolutely incorrect when it suggests this rule does not require the prosecuting attorney to identify its expert witnesses. That is wrong. And when we're talking about what might be perplexing, I think what is far more perplexing is this idea that the state was permitted to stand up and completely conflate the two evidence rules, 701 and 702, and the court accepted that. Those are not the same thing. They're very different. And I just want to make sure that that point is made. In addition, this going back to the sufficiency here, again, what we're talking about is sufficiency as to one of these alternative means. The state has, discussed at length the fact that Mr. Jackson did not cut off the encounter or break off from it when he learned the additional information. But again, that's not our argument. Our argument here is that this is an alternative means crime, and we're talking about solicitation versus agreement. And that there just was not that indication of solicitation of a minor for payment. Everything after that point, that initial solicitation of an adult for no payment was agreement. And we would submit that that's clear based on the communication between Mr. Jackson and that detective. And if there's no other questions, we would ask that this court reverse. Thank you.